Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Children's Justice Project monthly training series. This training is offered to key stakeholders involved in Wyoming's juvenile court system and held every second Tuesday of the month from 12 to 1 p.m. To obtain the materials electronically for today's training, please visit the Children's Justice Project website at www.courts.state.wy.us/initiatives/CJP and then click the training tab in the middle of the screen. If there are any questions, participants are welcome to call in during the last 10 minutes of the training session. The call-in number is area code 917-889-8064. One may also post questions and comments using the online chat session on the Blog Talk Radio website. We hope you'll find today's training informative and would like to thank you for your attendance.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Edie Troutwine with the Children's Justice Project at the Wyoming Supreme Court, and we want to thank everyone for joining us for the monthly Blog Talk training episode. Today's monthly training episode is called An Overview of the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act of 2014 and subsequent changes to Wyoming policy and practice as a result of this federal legislation. Our presenters today are as follows. We have Stacy Obricht, a Wyoming attorney who works for Public Knowledge LLC, as well as Deborah Hibbard and Stacy Dunley from the Wyoming Department of Family Services. And today our presenters will provide an overview of the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act of 2014, with a focus on 4E requirements for identifying, reporting, and determining services for victims of sex and labor trafficking. Today you will learn about changes to Wyoming Department of Family Services policies and procedures. The presentation will also provide specific information about Wyoming DFS Policy 2.9, which is the human and labor trafficking policy. Also, you'll hear a description of new tools being implemented in our state to help identify and provide services to victims. As previously mentioned, the handouts for the presentation can be downloaded off the CJP website, and we would encourage you to do that as the presenters start moving through their presentation. So again, thank you for joining us today, and with that, I will turn it over to Stacy Obricht.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to walk through kind of an overview of the Act, talk about the three different titles, and then hand it off to the Wyoming DFS employees to talk about kind of how they're implementing talking about the new policies in Wyoming around it. So I'll be walking through kind of the federal pieces. This Act was signed into law on September 29th, 2014. So a couple times during my presentation, you'll hear me talk about within 1 year after enactment or within 2 years after enactment, certain things have to be done. That's the date from which that timeline starts. So there's three titles to this Act. The first title is talking about protecting children and youth who are at risk of sex trafficking. The second title is talking about improving adoption incentives and extending family connection grants. And then the third part is talking about improving international child support recovery. So actually, we're covering quite a few topics today. We'll be talking about both sex trafficking as well as APLA, the ages for that, adoption incentives, and international child support. So I'll kind of frame that by the three acts. So we're going to start with the first act, which is all about preventing sex trafficking of children. The way that the act defines that is a child is a victim of child sex trafficking if there is a commercial sex act that was induced by force, fraud, or coercion in which the person induced to perform the act has not attained 18 years of age. They also further define sex trafficking, meaning the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for the purpose of a commercial sex act. Just so you know what we're talking about as we walk through this. So the first change in the Act is that the state agencies across the country have to develop new policies and procedures for dealing with youth who are at risk of sex trafficking. So the policies and procedures are supposed to be aimed at identifying, documenting, and also determining services for those children who they think are victims or at risk of being victims. This only applies to the kids who they have responsibility for in foster care, or run away from foster care, or those that are receiving services under the CHAFE program. And this is actually modifying the 4-year plan requirements, which is why the states are all busy getting those in place. That was effective 1 year from signing, so by September 29th, 2015, about a month or 5 weeks ago is when those were supposed to be put in place. They also, 2 years after enactment, have to report or have the ability to report immediately within 24 hours the children who are under the responsibility of the state who are identified as sex trafficking victims to police so that they can deal with those very quickly. And also talks a lot about foster youth who are running away from foster care being at a high risk. It's also amending the requirements about the data that the agencies send to the feds through AFCARS. So this is now going to include data on how many children who are in foster care who are identified as victims of sex trafficking. This will allow HHS to do some better data analysis as to how prevalent this is across the country and also looking at states that have high rates of it specifically. So 1 year after the enactment, they also have to develop plans to locate any child who's missing from foster care, figure out why they left, and if they were a victim of sex trafficking while they were gone. Part of this is working through a plan with a group. They're supposed to consult with state and local law enforcement, juvenile justice systems, healthcare providers, education agencies, and organizations in the state with experience in dealing with at-risk children and youth. So it's really supposed to be a multi-stakeholder plan pulled together. And then HHS has to, 2 years after enactment, so by end of September next year, report back to Congress on all the information that they've got about these kids who run away from foster care and what their risk is of being victims of sex trafficking, as well as kind of the trends in the number of runaways in each fiscal year that the states are dealing with across the country. So that's the major changes around kind of identifying and protecting children and youth at risk of sex trafficking. Still in Title I, the next big chunk of changes are around improving opportunities for children and supporting permanency. So the first piece is talking about a reasonable and prudent parent standard. So it requires states to implement this standard for decisions that are made by foster parents or someone who's in a some sort of institution and the person in charge of their care there. This standard would allow them to make decisions that affect the child's health, safety, and best interests. And also to help them participate in extracurricular activities and school and social activities. The Act requires that the caregivers are trained about it and also talks about how the biological parents fit into the picture as far as participation in activities. And then there's also information about liability policies, and there's a grant under this for the Independent Living Program. There's going to be an additional $1 million that'll go into that independent living program to support activities for youth who are likely to remain in foster care until age 18. The next big change is about APLA. So another planned permanent living arrangement, some people also call it OPLA, other planned permanent living arrangement. This piece is talking about ensuring that kids who are under the age of 16 don't have APLA as their permanency plan or their permanency goal. So it's saying that if they're under that age, that shouldn't be the goal. And if they're over that age and they have that as their goal, there's additional kind of case plan and case review requirements with that goal so that they can hopefully work with that kid to attain permanency. So at each permanency hearing, the state has to document intensive ongoing efforts to return the child home or to a secure placement that is either a relative or guardianship or adoption. And they also have to have procedures during those permanency hearings that they ask the child about the desired permanency outcome, and they also make a judicial determination on the record why APLA is the best permanency plan for that child. And again, those changes are only going to apply for kids now over the age of 16, because the ones under that can't have that as their permanency goal any longer. Also, amending some definitions in Title 4A, and also that takes effect in 1 year. So that one went into effect September 29th, 2015. And it does have an exception there for states that have to get new legislation passed, and they have some more time to implement that provision. And so the next change is talking about kids who are 14 years of age and older. And really, I think the Act is pushing for them to be much more involved in developing their own case plan and talking about what that transition to being an adult looks like. So they're saying if they're 14 and older, they need to be allowed to help develop their own case plan and any changes to that. And that they can also pick two people to be a part of their case planning team. The state can say if they pick someone, it's not going to be safe for them or it's not in their best interest, they can actually reject that person, but it allows the child to pick two people. And then the case plan for the kids who are ages 4 and older must also include a list of rights document that talks about what are their rights in foster care, what are their rights for education, for visitation, documents that they have to have when they leave foster care, how they participate in court and what their rights are around that. There's a whole list of things that need to be included into that list of rights for the states. And the youth actually has to sign off that they got that document and that it was explained to them. Part of the Act says that it needs to be explained to them in an age-appropriate manner. And that is, after 2 years of enactment of that, HHS actually has to submit another report to Congress about best practices for implementing this requirement. So there's going to be, I think, a lot more information on this at the end of 2016 about how states are doing this and implementing it. The other big change is making sure that when kids leave foster care, that they have a copy of their birth certificate, Social Security card, health insurance information, medical records, and a driver's license or some sort of equivalent identification card. So if they are exiting foster care, then the state agency is responsible for making sure that they have all of those documents. And this did go into place in September 2015, so this one is here unless, again, state legislation was required to implement. And then the last piece around, the last change around permanency and opportunities for kids in foster care is just, again, changing the amount and type of data that's being sent to the AFCAR system by the agency to the feds. And so they're going to need to now report on data for children who are placed in child care institutions or other group settings that are not foster homes and report on outcomes for those children. And it needs to include the number of kids with a permanency goal of APLA and their ages to make sure that they're within the age range of that being an okay permanency goal for them, the duration of the placements and the types of institutions that they're there, and any kind of special needs that the children had that was the reason why they were placed in that setting. Okay, the next or the last piece of of Title I is about creating a national advisory committee. So the last part of this title created a national advisory committee on the sex trafficking of children and youth in the United States. This is supposed to be a 21-member committee to advise on policies to improve the nation's response to domestic policies concerning the cooperation between local, state, and federal efforts to address the problem. So this is supposed to be in place 2 years after enactment. So by September 2016, this should be in place. The Secretary of HHS is going to appoint all the members, and at least one member must be a former sex trafficking victim. There has to be at least two governors, and then one Democrat and one Republican. So they'll advise the Secretary of the HHS and the Attorney General on these policies and kind of come up with best practices that they'll inform the states on a quarterly basis about addressing sex trafficking and evaluating the implementation and the recommendations. Okay, so the next title of the act is about improving adoption incentives and extending family connection grants. So this extended the adoption incentive funds until fiscal year 2016. The amounts were expanded to have new categories with the goal of kind of making sure that adoptions and subsidized guardianships and getting overall placements up. So the states now for older youth. The states now receive $5,000 award for increases in overall adoption rates, $4,000 award for overall increase in subsidized guardianship or kinship care, and then $7,500 for increasing the adoption rates of pre-adolescent children. So these would be the 9 to 14-year-olds, the ones that are getting close to those teenage years. And then a $10,000 for increasing older child adoptions. So that would be 14 years of age or older. The numbers, they want to see the numbers go up, which is why the rates went up. They're per placement in each of the categories, so the agency can get that money to help subsidize those adoptions and guardianships. And then it provides a transition period into the new incentive structure. So that's not going to come into effect right away. And then there's also a provision in there about trying to ensure that adoptions are timely. So looking at the length of time from the child comes into care until the end of it and the average length of stay. And what they're trying to do is get that total amount of time less than 24 months. So can be considered for a timely adoption award if their average length of stay in foster care before the adoption is finalized and we have that final adoption order is less than 24 months. And that's a pool amount, so they'll find out how many states meet that and then divide it by the number of states in the pool and the amount in the pool. So the states have to use these incentive payments to supplement other funds that are being used under Title IV Year 4B and not replace them. So it's trying to put more money into these efforts, not replace it. And then they're actually available for 36 months. So it's a longer period of time in which they can get those. They're also making sure that the act also, anyone who is eligible and receiving guardianship assistance would lose that assistance if their current guardian passed away. So the new provision ensures that kids can continue to be cared for by another legal guardian who's named in the assistance agreement if their guardian is unable to care for them or passes away. So that would just making sure that that guardianship kinship guardianship subsidy or assistance stays even if there's a death or something that makes it so they can't care for them any longer by, again, having that backup person named in the agreement. The other piece of this is making sure that their agency identifies and notifies all parents of siblings within 30 days. So adding that to their search for all of the adults who are in that child's life within 30 days of their removal from custody of their parents. What they're adding on to here is to make sure that they're looking at other siblings, like half siblings or quarter siblings or step siblings that child may have, and finding those parents and adults that are involved as well. These would include people who would have been considered siblings if not for a termination or some other, ending of their parental rights. So any type of sibling looking for the parents and the adults in their lives. This was effective right upon enactment, but if legislation was required for the states, then they were allowed to ask for more time. The second part of Title II deals with the Family Connection Grant Program, and so this extended this grant program longer and at the same amount as it had been funded before. That was really used to support kinship navigator programs, and so that's been extended as well. Okay. The final title of the Act is talking about improving international child support recovery. So they are pulling together, HHS is now required to pull together an intra-agency regarding data exchange standards. So they're supposed to set some data exchange standards or a recommendation for them for information and data exchanges between the feds and other state agencies. They're also authorizing access of the Federal Parent Locator Service, which is how in the United States, how child support is collected. A lot of times they're using the Federal Parent Locator in order to do that. They're now allowing a child support enforcement agency in a foreign reciprocating country access to that. And it also provides access to that Federal Parent Locator Service for tribal governments. This was authorized then also in June of 2015. HHS has to send Congress a report on the provisions and the effectiveness of it and any sort of recommendations or best practices. And it went into effect on October 1st, 2015, so just about a month, a little over a month ago. So that's the overview of the Act. The last thing that I wanted to talk about was kind of some resources out there if you want more information or need more information. Barbara and Stacy from DFS are going to talk about some of the Wyoming policies and resources, but what I wanted to give you were just some places to go for some national information. So the NCSL, the National Committee for State Legislators, actually has some information on their website about the Act, which has a good overview. There's a guide for states on implementing the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, and that can be found online if you just actually Google it. You can locate it. And then there's a couple agencies that have some really good kind of summaries, overview documents about the Act. You can find a good one on the CWLA website, on the Child Welfare League of America. You can find one on childwelfarelibrary.gov, and then also on the website for the Children's Defense Fund. And then the Capacity Building Centers, which is the new federal TA program from the feds to the states, both the state child welfare agencies and also the CIP program, has some resources out there, and it's also developing more resources about this Act. So they can be found online, and it's capacity.childwelfare.gov, and you can find the Capacity Building Center's information there. The Capacity Building Center for States has some information up there already, and the Capacity Building Center for Courts is actually starting a constituency group for the CIP directors who are interested in how the courts are implementing this Act that actually starts up this month. And they're going to be working on some things that can also be posted up on the website for states and agencies to use in working with this. I think right now most of the focus has been on the preventing sex trafficking provisions, and a lot of the states haven't yet gotten through full implementation or full development of what the new ACLA provisions look like, and the other pieces of it. As kind of the first goal is really looking at that sex trafficking piece. Okay. Stacey, are you up next?
Yeah. So as far as what you just covered, Stacey, and what we've done to implement those things, I was going to talk about the part that pertains to CHAFE and making sure that kids who are likely to remain in foster care until they're 18, that they have ongoing opportunities to do things that are developmentally appropriate activities. So as far as APLA and limiting it to children age 16 or older, that is something that we have put into our case plan and family service plan policies for both probation and CPS. And although that is okay for 16 and over, we do still have in our policy, though, that we will work to find more permanent options, even if APLA is the identified goal for a child who's 16 and older. We're still going to try to find them something more permanent. We have added into the same policy, the family service plan policy, and the probation yes case plan policy, about giving kids who are 14 and older that authority to participate in development of their own case plans, and added that they can include two members of their support team in that planning. I do think we've clarified that they have to be an adult. There were some questions about if they can invite their friends and things like that, and so we did say that it does have to be an appropriate adult. So we've added that to our policies to make sure that that's being done. We have, and that is something I think that was being done before, but it is now in the policy, so hopefully more clear for everybody. We do want to make sure that we are providing our youth with their documents when they leave, so their birth certificates, social security card, their health insurance information, and we have included that in a couple places. If you look at the website, there's an independent and transitional living plan. It's called our 9T that lists out those documents that they should be leaving with for the caseworker. That's something that our caseworkers have access to. Our independent living coordinators statewide also have access to it. So hopefully between the two, we're able to get, if we don't have these documents, we're able to help them obtain them and also let them leave care with them. But we have listed them out as well as some other things, their court order, things like that, that they should be able to leave with. And again, that's in our 9T, our independent and transitional living plan. In addition to that, we also have developed a Rights for Wyoming Foster Youth that's also uploaded at the website. That talks about all of the things that our kids are able to have. So, and there's a lot of different things, but making sure that they can receive services without regard to their race and ethnicity, making sure that they have an appropriate home with appropriate clothing and food, that they can attend their educational meetings. So there's a list of, 12 different things that the caseworker is reviewing with them. Also, the guardian ad litems were part of the development of this form, but also a spot for them to review it as well, and also list what those people's contact numbers are if the youth has any question. But it is something that's required for our caseworkers to do, so that way the youth know that they do have these rights. And in that form, we've also listed that they do have the right to leave custody with those documents. We have also are doing youth credit checks. The age was previously 16, and I don't know that we were doing that regularly or had a good system in place, but we've now got agreements with all three of our credit agencies. And so for youth who are 14 and over, on their birthday, we're going to do it, and then we'll provide an annual report. because we are just getting caught up on this, we did go ahead and do all of the kids who were 17 and likely to be leaving custody, and then do those. And then, like I said, as the youth have a birthday, we're pulling them annually and providing that to, we're pulling them up here and giving it to the worker so the worker can discuss those results with the youth and then be able to correct anything if there are any problems. We've done not a ton, but we've done quite a few, and there haven't been any significant issues, thankfully, yet, but we will continue to do that for kids who are 14 and over. What else? I think that that's all that we have. Do you think there's anything else? But like I said, the 9T, the Youth Bill of Rights, are all listed on the website if you want to take a look at those. And we've also made these changes in our policy and gone over that policy changes with the supervisors to relay to the workers to make sure that we are complying with these new things. That's all I have.
This is Deborah Hibbard. I think one of the big things that we could really ask help from you all is allowing our youth to be in the court hearings, to be able to express their permanency plan and the needs to continue to either have APLA as their permanency goal or to be able to identify other permanency options for them, which could include relatives or maybe a kinship placement, a coach, or someone in their faith-based community. I think a lot of times when we have their voice in a courtroom or in an MDT, that really helps the department advocate for those youth. One other item I just want to share, as Stacy mentioned earlier about the prudent parent standard, that is one of the legislative actions that we're going to try to address this next February. We have some draft legislation drawn up to advocate for the prudent parent standard, mainly to protect our foster parents and our substitute care providers with any liability issues. And so we'll try to keep people posted on that, as at least Ms. Troutwine, so that if she needs to post anything or anything needs to be discussed, that you have that information. So I'm just going to briefly go over the human and sex trafficking policy, which is policy 2.9 for the department. As it was mentioned in the Federal Act, those who are in our custody, care, or supervision are the youth and children that we will be screening. And that screening tool is the SS07, which I believe we've provided as well. But as for the policy, we have identified any child or youth who's placed in DFS custody or is being supervised by DFS. We've listed the definitions of what those are, which comes with the Federal Act. We'll be screening any of those children or youth who come into the custody as a sex trafficking victim. We're asking our staff to do that within 7 days. That could include child protection, CHINS, or juvenile services, probation youth. If they are screened as a possible victim, then we are required to contact law enforcement and the county or district attorney. It's important for them to be involved, as there may be criminal charges pending. We are working to get this screening tool into our SACWA system, our YCAPS, as many of you may know it, because, as Stacy stated, there are reporting requirements in the next 2 years for us. And so we will need to be reporting that information to the Administration for Children, Youth, and Families. We're identifying that if they are youth or children who are high risk, that we really do immediate services for them and identify what those mental health or educational services are. We're looking at our foster care training, as well to identify if we have any foster families who could serve those children or youth immediately. Those are unique situations for us, and so we want to provide training to the foster parents who would be able to care for those children. We also will be screening our youth who are runaways or missing from care, and I'll explain runaways. We see our probation many times who are runaways, run away from their homes or from a facility or from foster care as an at-risk youth. So we'll be screening for them. Missing from care, we have had some who of our foster care are missing. Maybe a custodial parent is having a visit and they decide they want to take the children with them and they are in our custody, therefore we need to identify them as missing from care. When that occurs, we will be required to contact law enforcement and enter them into the National Crime Information Center. We are to contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the county and district attorney, if the child has a guardian ad litem or a defense attorney, and then a court, any court or judge, we need to make a report to them immediately as well. That information will be entered into, again, our SACWA system, or YCAPS, as it is a part of our data requirements. If we do have youth or children who are identified as victims of sex trafficking, we will be assessing their needs. We may have to do a medical examination. We really want to be careful in those situations as they are already victims. And we want to just make sure that if we are doing a medical examination or if that is one of the suggestions from someone, that we respect that child or youth's privacy. That could be more traumatic to them than helpful. Our sex trafficking tool is pretty simple. Again, we don't want to traumatize any child or youth who is a victim. So really it is about if they have been identified as a victim and or a runaway or missing child. We're going to utilize some specific tools to gather this information from our child or youth. We're not going to come right out and ask the questions. If you're looking at the screening tool right now, which is the SSO7, we're not going to come right out and ask the child or youth if they are a victim, if they had unwanted physical or sexual contact, if they had a video or a photo of them. We're going to utilize some different tools to gather that information. Again, we don't want to traumatize the victim who has or could be a victim of sex trafficking. We will make a referral immediately to law enforcement. If there is a photo or any video of them, specifically that we have concerns that they may be on a website so that they can take matters further, because as you know, the department doesn't have that availability to do. An important point that we have already identified some labor and sex trafficking victims in the state of Wyoming. I think when we have a lot of cross jurisdictions, like different states, we see that victims are transported into Wyoming or even outside of Wyoming. And to identify them and provide the services for those children or youth is important for our state. We do have a human trafficking task force that has just been started under the Attorney General's office. And so if you have any indication that you would like to be a part of that, if you'll let Edie Troutwine know, then we can talk to that task force about getting you on that. So I think that's all that I have to go over the policy and the screening tool. So Edie, I think if we have questions, we're ready.
Okay, so I have the chat lines up, everyone. So if you have a question, you can either post it on the chat line or call into the number on the Blog Talk software. But maybe I'll ask you three presenters, there's a lot in this federal legislation. I know we've reviewed all pieces, but what are some of the main things that really stick out in your minds that you've already seen have had the biggest impact in Wyoming from this legislation?
This is Stacy Dunley. I think us having policy and seeing this legislation that actually mandates that kids 14 and over are involved in their case planning, I think we knew that that was important, and certainly a lot of areas were doing that, but to have this where they're saying that they have to be included is really, really important and really powerful. And not only that, but the fact that they can have other players at the table sitting with them, a lot of times that was prohibited in the past for people who are concerned about confidentiality or statutory members of an MDT. And so I feel like this is really, really a great opportunity and something that will give our kids the voice that they should have had all along. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that I see from this, giving them a voice.
And Deborah Hibber, I mean, you talked a little bit about this next legislative session, some changes to the statutes, but are you all contemplating changing the MDT statutes that kind of outline the mandatory members to allow those youth to include additional folks they identify?
This is Deborah. That hasn't been a topic of conversation for this legislative session. Mainly, we want to focus on the prudent parent standard so that our youth can be involved in those activities and events like other children and youth are. And so that's kind of one of the main focuses that we are with that one. I think we've also seen some questions brought up to us from our stakeholders and community partners about the about APLA and having it only be 16-year-olds. And one of the reasons why we have in our policy that even though APLA is identified as a permanency goal, we know that our youth have kind of a better permanency option if they get that voice to identify someone, and that we continue to look for them and involve them in those decisions. We know that our youth at 18, we don't want them to be homeless, and so that's our real focus that we have, that if they have at least identified permanent plan or support, then they have someone that they can talk to after they age out of care.
Great. Well, thank you to all the presenters, and we haven't had any questions yet on the chat line or call in. And so, Stacy O, Stacy D, and Deborah Hibbard, any last comments or statements you'd like to make before we sign off?
This is Deborah and Stacy, and we don't have a whole lot.
Nope. If there are any questions, let us know, or if there was more information or policies needed, and we can get that out as well.
And I don't have anything to add as well. Thanks. So.
Okay, thank you to all the listeners that tuned in today, and we will be moving forward with a Blog Talk Radio presentation in December. So the information for that presentation will be posted to the CJP website December 1st. So please tune in next month. And again, if you are listening to this presentation, we would ask that you take some time to fill out a brief survey. There is a link to a SurveyMonkey on the training announcement that was sent out. So if you have time, please fill it out. It's important for us to hear your feedback so we can continue to improve these presentations. And thanks to everyone again, and have a great day.
Thanks.